UCCF's Be Thinking website, bethinking.org, offers you free access to some of the finest apologetics resources in the world. Make sure you sign up as a BeThinker to receive our monthly email. The BeThinking email is packed with handy information highlighting new articles, film, book and music reviews, and is filled with practical examples of how you can make good use of the excellent and insightful material on bethinking.org to help you grow as a thinking Christian. BeThinkers combine a good understanding of the issues with a character that shows that the biblical truths that the BeThinker describes are authentic and life-changing. Log on to bethinking.org and become a BeThinker today.
Isn't the Bible homophobic? You know, the Bible is predicated on this worldview which is not only sexist, keeping women down, but it is also, you know, anti-gay. And in this day and age, surely you can't be saying that this book has relevance or conveys truth or meaning. Again, interesting how often this question comes up in our apologetics. I don't know if that's the same for you in your context, but that's certainly true for us in the UK. Now, this argument is articulated in lots of different ways, and I'm probably going to focus on three for time's sake, because I want to open things up for questions. The first one would go something like this. Christians and the Bible need to catch up with contemporary society. It is so outdated to say that homosexuality is wrong, that it is morally wrong to be active in a homosexual relationship. It is so of the arc, if you like, to say that. It is so outdated that we therefore reject you and your message. It is outdated. You as Christians must catch up with society. Now, what I find really interesting about this argument is that the assumption behind catching up is that the Bible was written in a context where people thought homosexuality was wrong. And so the Bible writers just take on the culture that they're writing in and import that into their text. And now in our culture, when it isn't wrong anymore, we just need to reject it. Do you see? It's almost as if the Bible was written in kind of Victorian England, when, you know, any sex pretty much was wrong. And it needs to catch up with today's society. Whereas, of course, the opposite was actually true. Homosexual practice was incredibly widely spread in the Roman Empire and in Greek civilization. It was widespread in the era of the New Testament. It was accepted. It was, you know, a socially acceptable way of living one's life, not at all frowned upon. And so when the New Testament talks about Christians no longer living in that kind of lifestyle, in that time, that was countercultural. Now, interestingly, the same is true of the Old Testament. You know, both the Canaanite and Assyrian civilizations accepted homosexuality, except in cases where that was forced on somebody else. And in Egypt, Egyptian civilization, homosexual practice was accepted as long as that it wasn't with children. Okay, so the idea that we need to catch up somehow is fallacious, or certainly the idea that the Bible needs to catch up and has imported a cultural morality from the era in which it was written and is now trying to impose that on our 21st century. It's interesting, I was involved in a kind of radio, or sort of a BBC radio kind of phone-in discussion thing about all kinds of issues, and this was one of the issues that came up. And this was how the question kept on being phrased. You know, you need to catch up, you need to get with it. Now, the ironic thing was that I was the youngest person contributing to this thing by about 30 years or something. And I used this argument, the idea that the New Testament was written in a context where homosexuality was acceptable culturally. And so it's very strange to think that it was written in Victorian England. And it was quite interesting the reaction that provoked, but we can think about that later. Now, the second idea is this idea of homophobia. And for us as Christians, we need to be very, very careful about this, because sometimes this charge is true. The reason we need to be careful about it is that sometimes this charge, when given against Christians, is true. Some Christians do have an irrational hatred and hostility towards others on the basis of their sexuality. However, we need to draw a distinction between homophobia, this kind of irrational fear, and a belief that is based on moral conscience and based on the writings of a religious text. And so the Evangelical Alliance in the UK said this: "We cannot accept that to disapprove of homosexual practice on biblical grounds is in and of itself irrational, hateful, or hostile." So we would want to draw a distinction between being hateful, irrational, hostile people and holding a moral point of view. Now, the New Testament texts in particular that deal with the issue of homosexuality have become increasingly contentious in our societies, and certainly in the UK are debated over the airwaves. They're debated on television and on the radio, and I've just put up there the texts for you so that you know what they are, from Romans, Corinthians and Timothy. And of course there are a number of Old Testament texts as well referring to homosexual practice. I think it's important as well that we see Jesus' statements about sexual purity, and we understand that they do include this whole area of homosexual activity. Both in Matthew 15:19 and Mark 7:21, Jesus condemns porneia, fornication, which is a kind of catch-all term referring to sexual intercourse outside of marriage. Now, Jesus, remember, as a Jew, knowing the Old Testament, would certainly have had the sexual moral teaching of the Old Testament in mind when he used this term. And so it would not be true to say that Jesus never made any statements which are relevant to the issue of homosexuality. So finally, often and normally, this question is raised as a question of identity. And this is why we need to be so careful and so sensitive when we deal with this question. I don't know if you've ever experienced being at a party or at a dinner with someone, and somebody's there who is homosexual and they find out that a Christian has also come. And they come up and introduce themselves to you. I've had this quite often. Probably because my friends say she's an evangelist, watch out. And then when you arrive, people come and insult you because they feel, you know, that's what one does to an evangelist. And so someone will come up to you and say, "Hello, my name is Peter and I'm a homosexual." That happens to me all the time. Homosexual orientation and identity are very, very closely intertwined in our postmodern culture very often. And there is this idea that this is me, this is integral to who I am. So what you as a Christian and what the Bible is trying to do is to deny my fundamental identity. And that makes me very angry. That makes me feel persecuted. That makes me mad. Now you can see how that would make you mad if this was what your identity was tied up in. For the Christian, however, we would want to draw a distinction, and the worldview of the Bible draws a distinction between what or who I am, my ontology, if you like, and what I do, my sexual proclivities, or even, you know, what I do vocationally. A distinction has to be drawn between my identity, who I am, and my activity, what I do. And it's interesting that many commentators on this field and, you know, people writing about this whole issue of the gay gene actually agree with this. Probably the foremost campaigner about gay rights in the UK is a guy called Peter Tatchell. And he says we must fight against the flawed theory which claims genetic causation for homosexuality. The flawed theory which claims genetic causation. I am not what I do. So not only do we need to be very careful about dealing with the whole thing of homophobia and make it clear that we're not irrationally hateful or hostile, we also want to attempt to draw a distinction between who I am and what I do in the worldview of the Bible. Now, the last question about identity is the whole issue of change. Is it possible to change my orientation? Because if it is not possible, how mean and awful of God is it to make me like this and then to deny me what I want and what I am? It's a very, very popular idea that it is impossible to change one's sexuality. But I just want to share with you one study which I think is really, really fascinating, which has just come out recently. And it's by conducted by a guy called Robert Spitzer. He's professor of psychiatry at Columbia University. And the reason his study in particular is interesting is because he is the guy, the medic, who got homosexuality struck off the list of mental disorders in the American Encyclopedia for psychiatrists. So he made sure that homosexuality was no longer viewed as a mental disorder. He was involved in that movement in 1973. And he has recently undertaken a study looking at this whole issue of whether it is possible to change or not. And here are his findings. In 78% of males and 95% of females who voluntarily underwent therapy, they reported a change of sexuality. 78% of males and 95% of females. Now, the group used involved 143 men and 57 women. And 66% of the men and 44% of the women achieved what Spitzer called good heterosexual functioning. That means they managed to maintain a long-term heterosexual, committed, happy, fulfilled relationship. 66% of men and 44% of women who'd undergone this therapy. Now, what's interesting is that when this study came out, this guy was absolutely blasted in the press as a sort of fundamentalist Christian. And he had to come out and defend himself. And he said, you know, actually, I'm an atheist Jew. And he wrote this: "My conclusion is that the door is open. I came to this study as a skeptic. I believed that a homosexual, whether born or made, was a homosexual, and that to consider their orientation a matter of choice was wrong. But the fact is that if I found even one person who could change, the door is open, and a change in sexual orientation is possible." Okay, keep your questions. Now, when we're talking to somebody who is gay themselves, and this is their main objection to the Bible, of course we need to be extremely careful with using a study like this and you know, making them very cross and upset. The reason I'm sharing it with you today is to say that there is this prevailing worldview that it is impossible to change one's orientation. To suggest that to change one's orientation is a kind of fascist, fundamentalist, nutter's idea. And that therefore the Bible, which talks about people having changed their orientation, after all, that passage in Corinthians says this is what some of us once were. So there were, you know, gay people in the church who'd come to Christ. That is completely wrong. And I just think this study is interesting for us to say that in the scientific world, the door is open on this question, and these issues are being discussed.